Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 179. This is a show about all things Linux, whether it's hardware, software, or whatever tickles our Linux fancy. We bring it to the show to discuss it with you every week. And by we, I mean myself, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and my good friend, the Linux Maven, a.k.a. the door-to-door geek, Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Dor?
Hey, Cody. Crazy week. Crazy day. Leading up to, I think, an end of a crazy month. Took off work today, stayed home, had to basically go into my youngest one's school and have us all agree that, yeah, my son's a bit hard to control. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, that's about it. Because
oh, it is so. That is so.
Well, you know, he's in first grade. I'll just say if there is a... And I said this to my wife. Okay. I'm sorry if this offends anyone, but I'm a firm believer that if your son is in first grade and he doesn't cause any problems, worry, because I think he's going to grow up to be a serial killer. Because aren't all kids a little bit, you know, rambunctious, difficult to manage? I mean, isn't that in their nature, like young boys? I don't know. Maybe I'm just weird.
In my experience, that's the age where they really understand, oh, wow, I'm around my peers all the time. And I'm a small person with a bunch of energy. Let's go crazy at every possible moment. And then they do it.
And they like it.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't want to sound dumb, but who are we to tell them that they are wrong and they shouldn't be able to, you know, do what they want to do and have fun? It's just a question of, are they hurting or causing mental anguish to someone else? And if they are, then yeah, we definitely have to, you know, stop it.
Oh, of course. But is he making those teachers earn their money?
Oh, I have little doubt. I have little doubt that teacher feels like she's underpaid right now. I mean, like, whoo-hoo underpaid.
Okay. Well, we could either start a petition or Uncle Cody could send your kids some penguin mints.
Penguin mints would probably fix everything right on up, too, I'm pretty sure.
There's only one way to find out.
Well, yeah, true. There is only one way to find out. I will say, my oldest one in the first grade, I don't remember being an angel either. He was bad. Like they literally were worrying about him bad, but they don't now anymore. He's fantastic. So I kind of asked them to show patience. I don't know if that's going to work or not.
Okay. So we're going to take a slight detour here. You brought,
you took some, a detour.
I know, but now like you are gingerly putting the car back onto the road, but I'm taking it off the grass into the mud. So you said something about your kids. Here's something I found out about my youngest son, who is now 11 months old yesterday, which is crazy. It's almost a year. Apparently, if you let your child be in the care of one of your siblings, and that sibling feeds it almost a half of a head of cauliflower, the child can tend to get a bit gassy and upset and keep you up until 5 o'clock in the morning. That's what I found out yesterday.
That sounds about normal for a kid. I mean, you know, kids delicate towards things. I'm sure you could give them a lot of stuff that would make them noisy, gassy, uncomfortable, rambunctious. You know. Now they know. Knowing's half the battle.
I'm not going to say this is related. I'm going to throw this out there and let the universe decide, but she is a Windows user.
Say no more.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Okay. I want to just really quick thanks everyone for their patience. We are getting as much stuff done as we can on the back scene. We have Linux Fest Northwest coming up. I have not been able to get the SSL cert yet, and I tried to start a couple conversations with HostGator. My patience was not enough to make me wait it out. It looks like if I try to get an SSL cert through them, they want me to have a static IP address, and I want to confirm that and ask why. Because if that is the case, if I get an SSL cert from them, it's over $200 a year. So the Linux for the Rest of Us Club, like subsite is not up and running yet. I do not want people to log into a website that does not have SSL certification kind of thing. But there is other things that will be happening and goings ons. It's now, I'm saying it, so it's written in stone. I will send everyone in the club a newsletter email out asking them to go to what's going to be a Google poll, asking if you do want to be involved in the BeagleBone Black competition, put your email address in here. I do not want to give it away to someone who does not want it. So if you do not see that email before a week from this show going live, more than likely it's stuck in your spam folder. You will definitely get the email before April 21st. So go look in your spam folder if you do not see it and you're a member of the club. So we are going to be giving stuff away. That's the first thing. More will come.
Yes, and we're working on some other special things to give to you, Linux for the Rest of Us club members. Very, very exciting. And speaking of the back end, we're making some changes on how we record the show, not only hardware-wise, but software-wise, because there, don't worry, if you want to talk about it at all, feel free, but I will say that there are some solutions that we've used in the past that, for various reasons, aren't as reliable anymore and/or causing quite a bit of frustration on both ends of this tin can over a piece of string.
I'll say it wouldn't shock me if the problem is quote unquote me, but I don't care. It's still making me mad. I've started using YouTube Live Events to stream this live and do the live recording, AKA the double backup. And my Google Hangouts now is showing incredible lag between computer to computer. WebRTC, I will say, is the quote unquote future of web technologies, not the past. So I'm looking forward to trying to use WebRTC. WebRTC right now seems good. Doesn't do the live broadcasting stuff, but at least it can do the back channel communications. If I'm on, Cody's on, Martin's on, kind of thing, we can use that to communicate between ourselves. And to be honest, it's a much higher audio quality than Google Hangouts, but there's no built-in live streaming feature, so I still have to use YouTube Live Events, which I don't mind.
Yeah, I mean, whatever works the time being. There are some other alternatives that we're looking at, but yeah.
Absolutely. So it is definitely getting more and more possible each and every day to do full broadcasting, professional-grade broadcasting for the internet age, I'll say, via Linux and via some browser technologies, actually. Getting us quite close, I will say. I also want to throw out there is an email right now sitting in my inbox for Think Penguin discount codes. I want to encourage people, do not forget, if you want to give Think Penguin a try, please do not hesitate, podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. I will give you a coupon code that you can redeem at Think Penguin. And if you do not use that code, please let me know so I can give it back to someone else. So as soon as this podcast is done, I'm going to be sending that person that email. And I encourage you, support those who support open technologies. Once in a while, go to Think Penguin, browse the site, browse what they have to offer, see what is applicable to things that you need or could need in the future. And the one thing I would ask you to take notice of is their Wii computer, aka branded Intel NUC computer. Apparently, everyone is now getting on this bandwagon of a branded Intel NUC, and I will happily say, Think Penguin has had this for over a year now, so I'm happy to see everyone else finally catching up with them. Companies like this are always going to be ahead of the curve, so do not hesitate when you need a piece of hardware for your business needs, your home needs. Go check out Think Penguin.
Most definitely. They support the community by giving back to the individual distros that they install, and you got to support those who support you. And to see the great work that they've done over the years, we've met people from the organization, which were all very cool. And the fact that they have a much larger catalog now than they did even 3 years ago. So it's not just desktops or laptops now, much like what Dor said with the smaller computers, selling all sorts of other, some custom merch, some other cool little kit. But definitely go check it out, thinkpenguin.com. And if you are planning on buying a computer, please send an email to podcast@linuxforthestofus.com, and we have some coupon codes which we'll give you for absolutely free to help you save a little bit more scratch off of that new machine.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Support those who support you. Support those who support open software and free software-based systems.
Very good. So, Dor, I'm really, really excited about this because I was reading this earlier this week, too. So I got a question for you. Please answer it as best as you can. Is TrueCrypt audited yet?
Kind of. I'm not going to be as absolute as these people are. Is TrueCrypt audited yet.com? They say yes. I say mostly. It's not completely audited yet. But they did do a good percentage of the entire stack of TrueCrypt. And basically, there's nothing wrong with TrueCrypt. Not trying to sound dumb, because I've been saying that a lot. From the instant this happened, I sided and I believed with the same thing Steve Gibson said before Steve Gibson said it publicly, which is there's nothing wrong with TrueCrypt. Obviously, these people just want to be disassociated with it, and they want people to stop using it. There's nothing wrong with TrueCrypt. There was never anything wrong with TrueCrypt. For people to use anything else, I still believe is 100 times more dangerous than never stopping using of TrueCrypt. Now, the thing with TrueCrypt is there's the main engine, and then there's the main interface on each operating system. I will say, on the Windows operating system, I think it was, there was a flaw in how it would perform the algorithm to come up with the random hash, but there was still enough entropy in how they were deriving it. It was still a perfectly acceptable method. It just wasn't absolutely as good as it could have been, should have been kind of thing. Bottom line, if you need encryption that you trust, not that the federal government trust, not that any other federal government trust, not that a software vendor trust, not that your enterprise trust, not that your boss trusts, not that your anything else insert to here trust, but that you can trust, you absolutely need to get TrueCrypt. Now, if you go on, I believe it's grc.com, you can actually get the last quote unquote fully functional version of TrueCrypt from Gibson. If you go to TrueCrypt official repositories, what you get is basically a read-only version of TrueCrypt. You cannot write to any in encrypted mounts. You can just read them.
See, I was just getting into using TrueCrypt, like not even 7 to 10 days before all that went down, and I was just, oh man, really? And I was like, oh, that stinks. And then I started reading many of the articles, you know, how it might be susceptible to this. Are we able to view the code anymore to an exact spec to where we could trust it? This and that. And I was like, oh, darn it. And then I saw this in the notes today, and I was just like, oh, that would be very cool. I wasn't even aware of the website that was kind of keeping track on if it's been audited yet. So very nice.
Yeah, and I will say, Martin put a link in here in our notes where if you want to actually read some notes, and it looks like the people that actually did the TrueCrypt, and it's just like another look at it, and I'll say more layman's terms, it looks like, because the actual report is filled with, dare I say, computer encryption legalese, which is not the easiest thing in the world to read.
I would bet not. All right, very good.
Yeah, and you know, to start out with something really hardcore and vicious, let's lighten up a little bit. Opensource.com, I've been trying to, you know, visit there more often, basically have fun on the website. And I saw this link that just got me thinking. We, on this show, talked about this off and on for a couple of years, and it's how basically all of our computers are now too powerful for 99.99% of our needs, and how the browsers are becoming much more powerful because of it.
Yes.
Here's a link on opensource.com, HTML5 for the game dev, how to build a console, and more gaming news. It's just interesting. I don't expect there to be a quote-unquote real console built in a browser. I mean, not really. I mean, come on. I do expect some, at least, games to be made in the browser, and I do think the level of games that can be made in a browser is really going to take a big jump up. It's still not going to be, you know, crazy. You're not going to need your game console. You're not going to need your Steam box anymore. But I do believe they are getting really good.
It is insane how well some of the, gaming today, obviously fantastic, but some of the, even the WebKit-based games now that we're seeing and are fantastic. And I wouldn't doubt that you're going to see with the advent of not even just an app store on a mobile device, but if you think of how mature streaming games is now, and I'm not just talking about footage, I mean actually streaming the playing of the game over a server into your micro console at home, whether or to a mobile device or potentially a browser. Yeah, definitely. I mean, most of that's already here. I can see it in some, I mean, just you were saying how strong the browsers are now. I could see that definitely happening for certain titles or certain specs in the near future, just with how reliant we are on that technology and how much it's progressing.
Yeah, and I'll throw this link into the notes as well. And this is the kind of thing, take with a grain of salt. Not even a big grain of salt. BioWare, quote unquote, a division of Electronic Arts. And I know Electronic Arts, it seems like they've ran the roller coaster of emotions from gamers for like the last 20 years. They've hit every type of emotion. And right now they're not in really good emotions, seems like, with a lot of gamers.
May I address that?
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm sorry. Were you talking specifically about EA or BioWare there?
I'm just saying EA is a general, I think, thank fault.
Yeah, EA, the reason that they're sort of, well, I guess several years in their own past few years, they were voted the worst company in America, period.
How? Why?
So, okay. You know what microtransactions are?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, they had what's called an online pass for several of their games for about 3 years. So let's say you back in 2012, you bought the current version of Madden Football, right? You buy it new, and then inside the game comes a little voucher with your online pass, which is basically a secondary ID code for you to then play the game online, okay? And the reason they did this is so that retail operators or people just trying to sell the games independently, and then so if it was going to prevent you from buying a pre-owned copy of the game and being able to play it online, unless you then bought another online pass from EA.
How much?
$5 to $10. I mean, it's not. It wasn't ridiculous. It wasn't like buying the game again, but it was another hurdle to go through. And they were trying to do this to basically say, I'm not going to quote them, but in essence, you could think they did this to say, well, you know, you might as well just buy it new from us because it comes with it.
Yeah, they're just trying to make at least a little bit of a hurdle. Now, I'd say from their standing point, well, this gives us a much more accurate view on the number of games sold versus games resold. It can make us understand our user base much more. Right. Blah, 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 blah. In reality, it's, if we did this, how much money could we make? Well, okay, if we do it now and we charge like $5-$10, then we'll have a really good idea. If we were to charge $60 a pop, how much money could we make?
Right. It's another form of lock-in, and they thought it was a great idea. The fans and the consumer, they didn't think it was a great idea. And more importantly, the retailers, in order to come back at this, just said, okay, well, if you're going to do that, then we're just going to price the game that much lower. And that way it's still cheaper for them to buy it from us and the pass from you than to just buy it new from you. And that's what they did. So that and a number of issues, you can just go on to Google and search for, you know, EA, worst company in America, and you can really find some interesting stuff. And then, not to get off on a rant here, but Ubisoft, the company who puts out Rayman and Assassin's Creed and Far Cry, they tried something else somewhat like it called the U-Pass. And to this day, they have U-Play, which is the Ubi U. Yeah, right. But yeah, universally, it was kind of shot down as a thing. And EA killed it. What, about 2 years ago now? But yeah, for about three years, it was a big deal.
That's really dumb. I mean, just really dumb. I'm hoping BioWare then is smarter.
Well, BioWare is the developer that made Mass Effect, and made the Dragon Age series and Star Wars: The Old Republic, that series. But so they released Mass Effect under Electronic Arts. So they were the studio. Electronic Arts was So you have people hating on EA, and then people hating on BioWare for Mass Effect 3. So have you heard of Mass Effect, Dor?
Oh, yeah. The game I looked at and I said I can never play.
Big sci-fi RPG. Basically, think, and some people will hate me on this, but it's the easiest way to explain it to a layman. Think of Choose Your Own Adventure with a great role-playing game, because the decisions that you make throughout the story actually change how it ends. So imagine playing three games, dumping 150 hours or more between these three games, and then realizing at the end of it that it wasn't leading to many double-digit possibilities, but only one of three.
Gotcha.
So people played through that, you know, for 4 or 5 years to get the end of this third game when it was finally released, or realized that in essence it was all for naught. And then they had a big stink about we're going to basically make them fix the ending, which I could understand it from their perspective, but at the same time, it's like, that's their game. I've never written an author and said, you know, I bought your book and the book ending sucked. You need to rewrite it.
Well,
yeah. And here's 10,000 more people who agree with me. So, yes, the troubles that EA and BioWare have had continue.
Well, that's, you know, they reap what they sow kind of thing.
Yes.
I will say, BioWare at least is doing interesting. They're developing something called Orbit, which is... it's a tool that is intended to be ran in Java in a browser to bring about gaming services. And it's kind of interesting if you're, they also are releasing code for this under the .NET CLR, which is the open source part of .NET from Microsoft. So they're definitely, let's say, pushing the envelope kind of thing. But this is kind of like brackets. Mm-hmm. Which was made by Adobe, but on GitHub that you could use. It's like their bleeding edge part of stuff that they're trying to do. So more companies are, it looks like, are trying to get into this future scoping, you know, games and technology. So it's at least interesting, I'll say.
And what I like to see about this, and this is not me hating on other companies who have done what I'm about to say, but the fact that this is not a deprecated project that they have now open sourced because they're essentially done with it, but the fact that it's something that they're developing that they used within one of their current games and they're continuing to develop on it, I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And I like seeing companies, even if they're not really pushing the envelope, they're at least pushing it in the open scope of things so people can at least see what other companies are trying to do.
Right.
To me, that's the best way to get the hardcore fans and, to be honest, to encourage competition. So I kind of like it.
Competition and loyalty.
Well, yes. Now, let's talk a little bit more about competition. I don't know about loyalty, Cody, but Microsoft already said their next version of Windows Server, I keep thinking it's 2015, I don't know, but whatever their next release of Windows Server is going to be, it's going to also include the ability to run Docker. Docker is taking the world by storm, so I can put it. It's the ability to run applications and services inside a container, and it's easily duplicatable, backupable, copyable, and movable. So think of it almost like portable apps, but for services, especially on servers or like apps on servers. Well, Microsoft has announced it's going to basically be creating its own container. I don't want to say to compete with Docker, because come on now, it's not going to compete with Docker, but it's going to at least give the Windows administrator the feeling of, well, you can run our container system, or you can run this other guy's container system. I have no doubt it's going to work. I have mild doubt it's going to work great, but it doesn't really matter. All that matters is what the Windows administrator wants to believe, and that's what they're going to run. I do have no problem with saying the latest version of 2012 server is so much better on the back end than all previous versions of Windows servers. You can actually run a GUI-less server running nothing more than PowerShell scripts to do a lot of things. That's really smart, actually. And I do know Hyper-V, the last iteration, has made unbelievable improvements versus the last Hyper-V, because they have to compete with VMware, or they will die in that area. So they're going to look at running these containers via Hyper-V, which I think is really dumb, because if you're not on the Hyper-V bandwagon and you're using VMware and Windows, well, then you can't use their containers. You're going to have to use Docker containers, is what I'm believing. But that's what they're going to do. I will say, I really hope they do it. I really hope it works. I really hope it's competitive, and I really hope it pushes Docker to try to be even better, because I like the idea of compartmentalized applications, And I literally want to see them come all the way down to the Linux desktop. I want to be able to say to somebody, oh, you want to install this? Just run this one command. And the one command will download this container, put it on your version of Linux, and just run. You won't have to worry about, well, are you on Ubuntu 14.04? Are you on Ubuntu 14.10? Are you on CentOS? Are you on Red Hat? Are you on Fedora? Are you on Linux Mint? Are you on, you know, and just, you know, no, you just run this Docker container. That's what I really want to see happen. And this is the kind of thing I think that can drive Docker forward and make it innovate and become a little bit better.
I agree. Yeah. Competition is always going to breed innovation. When it comes to this though, I don't know how I feel. Well, I know that my view of anything that they do right now is skewed by something else that they're doing, which I don't really like, that I'll talk about on the next show. But yeah, I only see them stepping. Well, and here's another thing too. For those who have been unsure, and if you don't know what Docker is by this point, either it just doesn't apply to you or you haven't been following the news. Either way, it's not bad, but the fact that they're stepping into the space also legitimizes it in the eyes of so many people.
Absolutely, absolutely. And to be honest, that's what has to happen for some people to believe this is being something real.
Right, right.
Yeah. Okay, well, the completely kind of opposite spectrum of the same thing. There's a listing I found over at LinuxBSDOS.com, which I honestly think I didn't find it now that I said it out loud. I think it might have been Mary T. that posted this on Google+. Mary T. over at smlr.us, Sunday Morning Linux Review. This to me is one of the indicators that I like to believe. When everyone thinks about Linux, they literally need to stop and think when you want to do something, not, well, can I get this to run on Ubuntu? Can I get this to run on Fedora? Can I get this to run on this? Can I get this to run on that? First, stop and think to yourself, shoot for the niche. Is there already a distribution that exists that fully does what I want to do from the second I boot up this distribution? And you need to look. And if you want to run Docker, here's six examples of, yes, they do have this. It is a six operating system designed just for Docker and other containers. The first one, Docker, it's called Boot2Docker. It's been around for a while. And by that, I mean over a year, because Docker's not really that old. But this is a, I would say, fairly mature implementation. The next one is CoreOS. And I want to mention this one just because Greg Crowe-Hartman, one of the lead guys for the Linux kernel, is one of the guys who started this up or had some heavy influence into the creation of this one. CoreOS is a OS purposefully designed as internet cluster server operating systems. So it's built and designed to be spun up and spun down very quickly. It's built and designed to be inserted into a cluster or taken out of a cluster really quick. And it's also designed to start up Dockers and shut down Dockers very quickly. And there's more here. I definitely encourage you, if you want to look at playing with Docker, check out this link in our notes and go pick one of these distros, download them, and start them up. That's probably the easiest way to see Docker up and running and play with it. And I will say Ubuntu Core is on this list. This is one of the newer ones. I have little doubt in my mind Ubuntu has put a fair amount of their resources into making sure this works, because with their Ubuntu Orange Box and stuff, they want to try to be a player in this arena pretty quickly.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to read much of that yet, but it does sound interesting.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, it's hard to say who's going to be the number one in 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years kind of thing, but I'm pretty sure it's only going to get simpler and easier for anyone to get one of these started at least fairly quickly. You know, everything's always going to require at least some work, but I don't see this as being insanely difficult to get started here soon.
Very good.
Yeah, this next link does not want to load for me, Cody. It's a announcement. I believe it's called Zentail, Zentyal. We did talk about this at least a little while ago on the show. There's a lot of tools out there that can help with system administration. In the Windows world, we have Active Directory, we have domain controllers and things to that effect. In Linux, I'll say we have two of them. One used to be called Clark Connect. Now it's called ClearOS. That's a RPM-based distribution. And the other one here is called Zentile. Zentile. I cannot encourage people enough. If you're looking for especially small office, home office, server administration pieces of software, you really need to check out Zentile. It's Ubuntu-based, number one. So everyone who's used Ubuntu should at least be fairly comfortable with this. They do have a full interface. That's an admin interface where it's very easy to say, okay, I want this server to have a FTP server. Okay, I want this server to have an SSH server. Okay, I want this to have a web server. I want to do remote login management instead of desktop user IDs and passwords. It also does have native Microsoft Exchange protocols, which I know Exchange is starting to fall out of grace very quickly, but this does have support for it. And this does have the ability to connect and communicate with Microsoft domain controllers and have Active Directory integration and actually modify Active Directory group policies on a Windows network. I wish it could host group policy stuff, but it can't, not yet, but at least it can do that. I really do encourage the small office, home office techs out there supporting that kind of area. Download this, drop it in your virtual Windows network, boot it up and see what kind of fun you can have with it, because it really is a powerful, powerful distribution.
Yeah, this looks like it provides a lot of functionality for people who would still use, like, I can see this and like you were saying, how Exchange is sort of falling from grace, but you know just as well as I do that there will be certain organizations that will still use it probably well beyond its, I mean, if it were to actually die and go away. Much like what we saw with XP, people will hang on because they're invested not only with time, but money on licenses, things like that.
Yep.
Yeah. So to see a distro step up and offer a lot of this functionality, because you couldn't really get this a few years ago.
Oh, yeah. No. Even if you could, I'm sure it required like a good 16-inch gray beard in order to administrate the tool. And yes, XP is still around. And let's be honest, there's still some Windows 2000 computers still around.
I got one right over here on my floor. It's dead.
Wouldn't shock me. I've never mind. Here's the kind of things it can have on the network for you. Complete email solutions on its own or work with Exchange. Everything from file sharing, CIFS, managing single sign-on. You can modify the OUs in AD, printer management, antivirus integration, DNS, DHCP, NTP, certificate A authority. And then you can even do some basic networking and firewall type things like firewall rules, port forwarding, packet filtering. Really a lot of stuff, OpenVPN, OpenSSL. This really was a fun distribution to run and to play with. They do actually have a hosted version of this as well, where you can actually do like a cloud version of this for your business if you want to have its own offsite email server kind of thing. This is really developed into a pretty professional tool. I'm really impressed by it.
Yeah, I haven't... I had a need for anything like this. I look at this stuff, it just kind of boggles my mind.
Oh, I understand. Trust me, because I understand some of it, but I really have not used 99% of these kind of tools on any operating system. And to be honest, I don't want to. I like telling other people, hey, this could be cool for you to use. Yeah, not me. I don't have the patience for it.
Yeah. While that might be nice, I can go, yeah, but you see this over here? I know to you it looks like a big pile of stuff, but it's actually a bunch of undone projects of mine, and those come before this.
Right. Yeah. And, okay, Here's a perfect example, Cody. I don't even understand this one either, but it sounds cool. A, it's called Terraform. That's a great name.
It is.
Yeah, Terraform. Terraform. Terraform.
Makes me think of John Carter's Ghosts of Mars. You ever seen that?
I think I have, yes.
Yeah, man. You want to know what happens when you put Ice Cube on the planet Mars?
He kills people or things?
Well, he kills people who are possessed by aliens who really aren't people anymore, but they've modified their bodies with pieces of metal, and they're monsters.
And he has that really mean look.
He's got the mean look. He's wearing a black tank top, military cargo pants, and he's running around with Natasha Henstridge on the red planet. And he's awesome. putting boots to butts.
Okay, that's cool. This is not that.
Oh, well, okay.
And it's at version 0.4, be warned. It's at version 0.4, be warned. Maybe in a year it'll be mature. Right now, it's okay to play with. I don't know if I would trust it for production quality things. Okay,
here's... So put it directly into development and production right now.
Yes, exactly. Okay, here's what it says. Terraform is a tool for safely and efficiently building, combining, and launching infrastructure. Okay, infrastructure is one of those wild card buzzwords. It really could mean a plethora of different things. Okay, here it is. Terraform gives you the ability to launch complete environments within a single click. And these environments, you can call domains, you can call networks, you can call lands, whatever. It all depends on how you define them. They can include support for Amazon Web Service, Docker, OpenStack. Okay, saying those three things right there tells me this is an extremely cloud-centric tool. It can use these cloud infrastructures. Now, in the cloud, there's private, public, and hybrid. Hybrid is the way most businesses should be looking at, because it's okay to have stuff on the public cloud as a backup or as an external resource. My humble opinion is that it probably shouldn't be your primary unless your business is internet traffic. But this, I think, can literally grow into one of those tools that gets sucked into another project as a way to simplify mass Docker deployments or mass Amazon Web Server and deployments or mass OpenStack things. Or hypothetically, I could say to Cody, I have this complete solution for your business. It can do X, it can do Y, it can do Z, it can do A, it can do B, it can do C, and it can communicate with H, J, and K. And it can do all this, and I can have it done by tomorrow. And you'll say, no way. This last company said $60,000, and it would take 6 months. I could have it done tomorrow, except for the final configuration step, which should take a day or two, and I can have it for you for $5,000. And literally walk into the place, push a button, and just have all the DNS done, all the DHCP done, all the network settings done, and have all these connections made with all these servers and services near instantaneously. That's what I look at this tool trying to become. If it can, I will tell people, watch out, because you will get people offering all kinds of crazy, customized, yet complete solutions, and this could really cause a lot of... lower the barrier of entry to a lot more intelligent systems and services that they can put out there.
Very nice.
And I'm very sorry, Ice Cube won't come with it.
Yeah, that's very true.
I know. Okay, now this is three in a row, Cody. This is another one I actually have a little bit of understanding about, but it does confuse me too. I'm not going to lie. It does confuse me too. Okay. How open, this is the article over at theopensource.com, thank you very much, by Thomas Peterson.
Peterson.
I've never seen a last name with so many double letters, though. It has two E's, two T's, and two S's. My Lord. Okay. The article is How Open Source Software Builds Strong Roots for Better Governance. Okay. Governance is one of those words, it's one of those things that's going to be hard for a lot of people to digest unless you already know it. Governance is not government. Governance is the act of governing, which is kind of like government. It's having policies and systems in place to mandate and uphold and monitor certain things happening, certain processes happening, certain bars to be achieved when you do stuff. Governance is the maintaining of systems long term. It's not just implementing, but then maintaining them and making sure they hold up to a high bar. And I understand what they mean. Open source, not all open source. Successful open source projects, especially bigger open source projects, completely lend themselves to this because they're better documented. Their flows are out in the public. It's very easy to look at them and understand how are commits made, who approves commits, how do commits get pushed upstream, what is your build process like, what is your distribution process like, what is your testing process like, what is your debugging, all these things combine to make a governance process up. So I understand what they mean, and they're very true. And this is why I really do encourage people, when you make decisions about small office, home office, enterprise type things, never think short term. Don't think, does this one application fulfill this purpose? No, there's a mountain of long term things that need to be answered. And a lot of them can be answered with a little bit of basic understanding of governance. Because then you really do understand the total cost of ownership and what's the total long term impacts to bringing this piece of software on. Because no matter what, you're sooner or later going to always have to either migrate off that piece of software or go through at least a painful upgrade to that software. And you got to figure out what's the best solution for this company or me as myself or me as this small enterprise. And with open source, I really do think they make those kinds of transitions much easier.
See, this is a perfect example of why I switched and why I think so many people switch, because you see that people switch to open source because they are sick of their closed source options. They got jaded, or computing became boring for them and they wanted a new challenge. This is, you see, one of the greatest things about this is that there has to be someone or a group of people sort of making these decisions on. Well, the fact that there are decisions being made as far as the specific pieces of software they're using versus just pick from your tiny catalog and give us money every year. And now you're locked in.
Right.
So it's education on behalf of the people implementing this. It's education there. The benefits for them are numerous. Probably, too high to even really calculate, but also the number one fact that these type of organizations would be using it, talk about a savings of cash.
Right. And that's one of the biggest things, long-term total cost of ownership.
Yes. Yes. And we're not talking just about, installing LibreOffice instead of Office, on the secretary's machines at the school. I mean, if you look at this, at this article, the countries that are implementing this are getting some really serious stuff done, like implementing water distribution chains, tracking all sorts of things within their government, basically turning their countries around because of the opportunities that they have with this software that they did not have with their previous options.
Yeah, and that's what it does. It's never a question of does it cost less, because where there is a cost savings, there will become naturally some kind of extra cost spending you're going to have to do, whether it's training or whatever. Just a question of what's better for you in the long term. And I'm going to have one more quote unquote boring link, Cody. Okay. This is by the Enterprisers Project, new website to me. I don't read, Cody. I don't read. I do not want to read.
I know you can read, but anything more than a paragraph makes your eyes spin around in your head like somebody just pulled a handle on the side of your head hoping for a jackpot.
It makes my brain turn to mush. I rarely compute what I've read, unless, of course, it's the Walking Dead comic. Then I apparently can read it perfectly fine.
Well, because pictures, brains, and blood, and Dale.
And crazy it's people.
Not,
and
Dale's not in the comic, though. I caught you there.
I don't care because I was too busy thinking about and hands getting cut off. Oh, wait, that isn't in the crappy show. Okay. This is a good read, though. Okay, it's 5 questions to determine if open source is a good fit for a software project. Okay, quick rewind. As a Linux user, Linux lover, I went through a roller coaster of emotions and beliefs. Okay, one of the things I used to believe was, why aren't you using Linux? What do you mean you're not using Linux? How are you not using it? You're an idiot. Why would you do that? Why would you? Yeah. And I had this belief that there was something you just didn't understand. You just didn't know about Linux. You just didn't understand why. Where now I literally stop and think, okay, every tool has its purpose. Every task has multiple solutions. They all come out with different difficulty, different time involved, different types of task involved, different cost involved, different output, different resolutions, different lengths of how long this solution will be good for, kind of thing. So there's no one solution. And not always should you use open source, but you should definitely have the question, should I be using open source with this next project? Here are 5, I'll say some of them are obvious questions to ask, but there's a list of 5 questions I think that put you through a mental exercise. Is open source right for this project? Really good questions. What business problems are you trying to solve? Okay. This is one of the biggest problems most people have in their life. And that is, they go to somebody and you say, what's wrong? And they say, I need Microsoft Office. Well, no. What's your problem? Microsoft Office isn't installed. I need Microsoft Office. No. What are you trying to solve? I need Microsoft Office. And it's hard to sometimes get that answer of, oh, well, my sister and my brother help me with my business. They use Microsoft Office and they keep sending me Microsoft Office documents. Okay, so the solution is you need to read or do you need to edit these Microsoft? And then you find the actual answers, kind of thing. So you really need to first get down to the problem you're trying to solve. And that's sometimes a hard question to answer. Then, of course, what are the relevant open source solutions? It's sometimes really hard to find. There's no one index you can go to of open source solutions and start typing in word processing and get every open source solution categorized and rated on how long it's been around, how much code is getting renewed, how many commits do they have, what's their release cycle like, what's their debug. You can't get this information. So what are the relevant open source solutions available? Also requires a lot of research in what's the validity of this piece of software. Is it good enough for my solution, kind of thing? And there's a couple more questions. I think it's a great mental exercise is what I'll say. Even if you're not trying to find a solution to a project that you're having, I think it's really good just to go through this exercise.
Well, it's a good discovery tool. Mm-hmm. And another hurdle, another barrier of entry for this is that think about it. It's literally like moving out of mom and dad's house and going living out in the bushes. It's like, Right. Where the hell do I start?
Right. But in this case, someone gave you a little list to actually look at instead of just kicking you out the front door.
Right. Maybe it was mom, because she's like, oh my God, your dad's crazy. I love you. Maybe it was your aunt, you know, who's just like, look, kid, your parents are nuts. Here you go.
Right. Or I don't want anything to happen to you. Here, take this.
Right.
Okay, now we're back to normal user stuff, Cody. So we can all just take a breath of relief. We can take it easy. Okay.
Before we do that, can I inject something really quick?
Absolutely, always.
This is not 100% confirmed, but it was kind of a blur for me. I need to go back because I'm so excited. You must have heard, Dor, of a certain comic book called Daredevil.
10 hours of it on Netflix right now.
Yes.
I'm terrified to turn it on.
It's so good. And I wasn't, I mean, like, I was a Daredevil fan, but I never really bought the comics. I always picked up a graphic novel here and there. And I dug the character, you know, and it never let me down. I never saw him as cheesy. I just thought that's a good, you know, I respected Daredevil. I wasn't a fan to the point where I bought into it, but I respected Daredevil. And then I see the trailer for this Netflix series, and I was just like, okay. But then I saw Vincent D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk, mm-hmm. and I thought, ooh, okay, mm-hmm. this is good, okay. Mm-hmm. And I thought, here's the thing. Netflix hasn't let me down with any of their series yet. They haven't.
Of course
any
not.
Any of their homegrown stuff or any of the stuff that they've acquired and then released.
Well, that's because they can't. They can't. Netflix are in the situation. If they burn people with putting out bad content, people will never forgive them. And people will start to look at Amazon and all these other sources of entertainment.
Yeah. But I believe, like, cause I'm like 5 or 6 episodes deep now.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm halfway in like less than 30 hours. Right. But I believe I saw, a particular Russian gangster in an episode flip open his laptop and there was some Linux on there.
Oh, I bet. I believe it.
I'll have to go back and check it out.
Well, I'll just say, speaking of Daredevil, we all know accessibility on Linux is getting much better, so it would make sense. But also, here's the thing. Did you know?
Awesome segue.
Did you know Netflix messed up and they didn't have the subtitles and stuff right on Daredevil? They had to like do an emergency fix, go back and fix it.
I read something about that today.
Freudian slip there, baby.
Talk about, gosh, how can you even explain that? Like, because you can't argue that blind people would be the core audience for Daredevil.
Well, no, but come on.
But still, yeah, okay. How can we put that, how can we use that as an analogy? Like, I'm going to give myself like 10 more seconds.
I know, because I'm thinking something like gold. Offer a cake called low sugar cake, but forget to modify the recipe to reduce the amount of sugar in it. It's like, come on. It's in the name. It's like right there. What's wrong with you?
You could have like a weight loss show sponsored by a bunch of fast food chains.
Yeah, and
like,
or bacon.
I don't care what it is. If bacon's sponsoring it, I'm at least giving it a try. That's not true. I can now think of about 5 things I wouldn't give a try, even if it was sponsored by bacon.
It's like the My Little Pony character, Pinky, being painted blue.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it first. Dor knows at least one character.
I don't know if I am. I just made it up.
Yeah, whatever.
Moving on. Okay, if you are new to Linux or you have a friend who needs a music cataloging piece of software, I really encourage you to check out Rhythmbox. There's really 2 or 3 I would tell you to look at. Clementine.
Yep.
Amarok, and Rhythmbox. Rhythmbox, to me, is the old faithful. It's the one that's been around the longest.
Yes.
But at about.com, I'm bringing an about.com link to the show. I don't know. This is like, isn't that one of the signs of the apocalypse?
Is it sponsored by Lycos?
It should be.
Should I search for it on Dogpile?
I'm going to say search.com. I'm just going to stick with that.
Okay.
It's the complete guide to Rhythmbox. Now, I despise the fact that they want you to click through 15 different pages in order to read this, but I will tell you.
Ad revenue, baby.
Yes, it is ad revenue, but I will tell you, this is actually a decent little read. It tells you step by step by step how to get set up with Rhythmbox as being your main media hub. Everything from importing music via CD, literally step by step by step, how to import from a FTP site, using Rhythmbox as a DAAP client, which is a digital audio access protocol, which is kind of like a iTunes server kind of thing. I'm going to tell you, the newest of the new users to Linux need this kind of handholding, and this site actually did, I think, a really good job at it.
I took a quick peek at it, and I concur. When you think of migrating operating systems, there's a few considerations you have. Web browsing, obviously. Can I play my media on it? Can I game on it, potentially? Word processor, am I going to be able to create or read PDFs, etc.? And yeah, this definitely, Rhythmbox, I mean, meets those needs. But just, you know, just as well as I do, something like this, you know, if you take a peek at the interface and mess with it for a little bit, you're only scratching the surface. You're not going to be able to get everything answered. To have a nice guide like this is very cool. I used Rhythmbox for the first couple of years, but now I use Clementine. I really do like Clementine.
Clementine to me is one of the most visually appealing, full-featured media applications on Linux. It just looks the part.
It looks great. It's lightweight. It's simple. It's not bogged down. And quite frankly, who doesn't love a little citrus wedge?
If you're allergic to it, you don't like it.
If you're allergic to citrus, then you're not listening to this show.
Well, you could be. You're just not puckered up while you're doing it. I will say one of the stupid things that this article does, which I actually kind of like, is it highlighted a lot of the keystroke combos to get things done. This, to me, was one of the key indicators. This is for the newest of the new user, because the newest of the new user does not know how to find out what keyboard shortcuts are for an application. Even if they've been using Windows for 15 years, they still don't know how to, you know, compute that out in their head, what is a keyboard shortcut and how to see what it is in the OS. So that was one of the nice touches. I will say that, again, the three you have to check out and play with, and I would honestly maybe even do it in this order, Clementine, Amarok, Rhythmbox. Rhythmbox is the old faithful. Amarok is, I believe, really a KDE application. So right there mm-hmm. tells you it's going to be bling heavy. It's going to look purdy.
Yeah.
And it's going to be pretty functional, pretty fully functional. But Clementine is the one to me that has the most probability of being really hot from now for the next year, 2 years.
Well, and also for those of you who don't know, who may be new to Linux, for years, and I'm not sure what the default audio player in Ubuntu is now, but it went back and forth between, I would say between Ubuntu and Mint anyway. It went back and forth between Rhythmbox and Banshee there for a while, which is another one.
Yeah, Banshee. I forgot about Banshee.
Yeah. Everybody forgets about Banshee. No one expects the Spanish Inquisition, and everyone forgets about Banshee.
It's kind of like the daredevil of music players, I guess. Okay, we've all heard about OpenOffice. We've all heard about StarOffice. Well, maybe. We've all heard about Microsoft Office. We've all heard about Office 365. We've all heard about LibreOffice. We've all heard about all these things. But I saw this one, and I said, what the hell is this? Never heard of this before. It's called Only Office, O-N-L-Y Office. Okay. I didn't get a chance to even see if this is downloadable or not, or just a web service you can use. But this is not an online office suite. I cannot implore that enough. This is an online collaboration tool for projects, and it involves documents, mail, and CRM. And when I say CRM, I mean customer relation something. Can't remember what it stands for now. All of a sudden. I cannot encourage people enough. If you're looking for open solutions, and yes, this is open source, quote unquote, software, you need to check out this OnlyOffice. I have little doubt in my mind this is going to actually turn into being a pretty powerful tool. Customer relations management. That's what it is.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Document management, online editors. The online editor looks to me pretty dang full-featured. Project management, Gantt charts. Gantt charts are a nice, easy, visual way of seeing task, dependencies of task, and total time frame needed for task and projects or subtask kind of thing. Mail, aggregator, CRM, and invoicing built right in. This, I really do think, is going to grow to be a really, really good tool.
Also, it says here, formerly Team Lab Office. Are you familiar with that one?
Don't believe I've heard of Team Lab. Me I know, either. Like, Zoho Office.
Yeah.
But that, to me, tries to be more like Office 365. This, to me, almost seems like a hybrid between, I'll say, Basecamp and Office 365, where they're trying to give you some Office functionality with some project management stuff. And for some reason on the video, I just did jazz hands. I'm really sorry. But it kind of brings them together in a unified solution. And to be honest, me being me, aka the Podnuts guy right now, I really like the idea of this. I would love to have a centralized hub for online collaboration, coordination, and project task management in one application. So I really do like the idea of this. Right now, it looks like it's online only service. 2 users, up to 4 gigabytes of disk space, $60 per year, $40 per year, 5 users, $80 per year, 10 users, $200 per year. So that's about $20 per person per year. That's, I know it's more expensive than I think Office 365, at least the lowest end, but I do believe you get more than what's on the lowest end of Office 365.
We're using Office 365 as a back end at work now.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sure it sucks.
It's much faster than it was 6 months ago, but
well,
then again, if someone stabs you with a needle in your eye 5 times versus 10, you think it's great.
Yes. Okay, I got one more I'm going to throw out here, Cody, and it's mini PC related. I will say thank you for everyone who's been giving me feedback on the mini PC show. Okay, and cut to the chase. I would love to do it. We're not doing it right now. Okay.
Let's do it now.
What?
Let's just do it now. Whatever.
No, not right now.
Oh, are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure. We're not doing it right now.
I don't even know what you're talking about. I just love getting you riled up. Go ahead. Sorry.
Are you sure?
Am I sure?
Yeah.
I am sure, and don't call me Shirley.
Shirley, you must be kidding. Podnuts.com is getting an overhaul, okay? There's a website right now you guys cannot access, and don't try to access it. We're doing our next iteration of Podnuts. The themes are done. The layout is pretty much done. The back-end filler is not even started. That shouldn't take too long, though. But right now, all 1,000-plus postings from Podnuts are being hand copied over kind of thing. I expect to maybe mid-May to have that all complete, and then about a month after that have the site done and actually launched. I'm focusing all my attention on the administration that's needed for that and just current Podnut stuff, keeping stuff up to date, trying to keep up with my emails and stuff. So once the new site gets launched, I really do intend to launch at least 3 more shows, probably 4 more shows total, not all of them me related, but new shows. And that's when the mini PC show will happen, but it's not happening right now. But I want to thank everyone for their feedback and suggestions and supports. Still let us know if you want it or not, because nothing is written in stone till it actually happens.
Yep.
I'll publicly say we're moving from Drupal to WordPress. Really quick side tangent. Here's the reason why. If you just look at both of them on their faces, like me as an old Linux guy a couple years back, Drupal is obviously the superior tool. What do you mean, Dor? Why is it the superior tool? Well, it's pretty obvious it's the superior tool because you have sites like whitehouse.gov and all these other sites I can name off that are all using it. Why are they using it? Because it's a superior tool. Because instead of WordPress starting out with some blog type template, you start out with a much more bare bones template that you can fully customize to your complete solution to your heart's content. And it's much more flexible and dynamic, and you have views, and you can do all kinds of stuff that you just, it's really difficult to do in WordPress. But when the rubber meets the road, total cost of ownership, the pain in version upgrading, the pain in revision upgrading, the pain in plugin upgrading, the pain with plugins falling out of grace makes Drupal a very poor solution for something that's going to be around for years. Now, supposedly in Drupal 8, they're going to fix that. Okay, whatever. I don't care. If it happens, it happens. It hasn't happened right now, so I'm planning on it never happening. My reality is what's here right now today. Right now today, I can install WordPress and very easily click upgrade. And then next week, very easily click upgrade again. And then next month, click upgrade again. And it just works. Okay. I'm minimizing the number of plugins to ensure upgrades go smooth. I can't do that with Drupal right now. So the new site's going to be on WordPress. Thus everything has to be re-entered by hand. There's no universal tool to jump from one to the other. I found that out the hard way. Okay. But let's talk about this really quick. Cody, I don't know if you saw this one. This is one of those ones that really snuck under my radar. It's already been out there for almost 3 weeks. Okay.
This looks familiar. Yeah.
Well, the piece looks familiar, but when I read it, it isn't familiar. Maybe I saw a picture and I just didn't catch up on it. Okay. This is a article over at LenoxGizmos.com, which I'll say, dude, I have a lot of fun at that website. Here's one. Kickstarter. It's a Kickstarter project basically called Onion. Onion's the place. It's called Omega. It's tiny, stackable, Linux-based Internet of Things modules. So it's basically, if you want to think about it like this, okay, we had desktop computers. Desktop computers you can open up, you can add stuff in, you can take stuff off, you can customize your computing experience, okay? We all saw Google Aria, which is the modular phone. You have the base skeleton, and then you have pieces you can slide in and slide out. And then you can customize your module phone experience. This is an Internet of Things customizable experience. So what you have is you have your main mini motherboard, and then you have a stackable framework to where you can take sensors and ways to communicate and just plug them on or take them off of the hardware. So it will be very easy to basically, for this framework, reuse parts. Hypothetically, I have a light sensor out in my patio that when it gets dark, it turns on my floodlight. Okay. And then hypothetically, well, I don't really need that anymore. Let me disassemble that, bring it inside, put it in my laundry room, and make it a flood sensor. It will involve taking one or two pieces off of the total five or so pieces and putting one or two more pieces back on, thus saving you a lot of money in this transition, but giving you the flexibility to change how you're utilizing your hardware fairly and very quickly, I'll say. I like this. I like the idea of this a lot. It's going to be, I think, hard for it to really take off and really get good momentum. But I think it's the kind of thing in a couple of years, we'll have something like this, maybe not this, but we'll have something like this in its place where we can basically offer, let's say, customized solutions for people for Internet of Things systems around their houses, where it really is a custom solution for what they want around their house.
Okay, but hold on here, because I'm reading the, something's not clicking in my head. I need you to set it straight here. It says tiny, stackable, mm-hmm. Linux-based IoT module. Oh, okay, I get it. I finally see the picture of it being, you can stack some of them up.
Right.
Yeah, see, I think that, because this takes small computers and it breaks them into pieces. So imagine taking a Raspberry Pi, every element of the Pi is its own, like, Lego, right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, well, I'm never going to run Ethernet on this. I'm only going to go wireless because it's going to be mobile. I don't have to have this Ethernet bit. Boom, pop that out of the, chain or whatever and throw in something else. And the one thing I don't think you've mentioned yet on this, and I've been trying to spin it in my head. So if you did mention this, I apologize. But the fact that the upgradability of something like this is going to be insane.
Well, I didn't even touch on the upgradability because I don't want to say that's an afterthought, a second thought, but that's the kind of thing you benefit from after putting it into play. But yes, you could very easily take a low resolution camera module and easily upgrade it to a high one. You could easily unplug a 10 base T Ethernet hypothetically to a gigabit or to a fiber connection. You could very mm-hmm. easily take the Bluetooth module, pull it off, put on a Wi-Fi module kind of thing. The expandability and the upgradability is only limited by what hardware gets produced for it. And I will say, I think it struck a nerve because there's 20 days left to go on the Kickstarter. They wanted a $15,000 was their goal. They've already have $154,000. So I think they're going to make their goal. Oh, wait, they did.
A few times over.
Just That's a couple, cool. Maybe 10 or so.
What I really like, too, is, let me get back up to it, about halfway down the page, more than halfway. Anyway, toward the bottom of the page, you can see two screenshots, the Onion Omega, the Omega Terminal, and then the Omega Console GUI interface. And this console GUI interface, I gotta say, for something like this, no disrespect whatsoever, it looks pretty damn slick. I like those icons. I like how everything is pretty crisp. And yeah, I can't wait to get my hands on something like this, because the possibilities are just endless.
Well, the iCods are a bit round for me, I'm not gonna lie, but
whatever.
But
you old man,
I gotta stick to my guns, man. I don't want to be flaky and go all over the place.
Do I find them attractive because I'm one of the millennial hipsters?
I would never say that about you.
Not every day for the past week.
Not in public eyes.
Jeez.
Yeah, here's the thing about this whole thing. Okay, one of the things I like about too is the picture in the Kickstarter is the size of this compared to a Raspberry Pi is kind of funny, because we think of a Pi as being super tiny. This is like a third the size of a Raspberry Pi. This one unit that they're having. The console to me tells me they understand the importance of a simplified, clean interface. And to be honest, hardcore engineers or engineering types have a super difficult time understanding end user interfaces. So obviously they already have somebody on their team who understands that. And to be honest, that's the kind of thing where if they don't get it right, there's no chance of success. Absolutely no chance of success. So they're definitely on the right track with this part of it, I'll say. Getting 10 times their Kickstarter goal tells me we better hear something about this. We better see something about this within like 6 months or 8 months, or I'm going to be mad.
I'm calling it right now, though. Okay, I'm calling it. You can call me crazy. You can say, Cody, there's no way that's going to happen, but I'm calling it right now. These will get released, and there will be... you'll be able to order them in kits, and you'll be able to order individual components. But there will be... Let's say hypothetically that they're on launch, whenever that is. There's 15 different of these little mini boards, right, that you can choose from, like a set, like series one, right? Yeah. So you'll have the ability, I'm hypothetical, I'm spinning a yarn here, buy the kit with all of them, and then you'll be able to buy them individually if you don't want to buy the kit. There will be some of them that will sell out immediately, and then people will resell them for over retail value through other channels while the manufacturers try to keep up production.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think that's possible. See, I thought you were going to go for a stretch and say, you know, The Price is Right would have a new game based around it, because that's a stretch.
That is a stretch, although Drew Carey can almost do no wrong in my eyes, so...
Well, okay.
I said almost.
I know, I'll say this. Old. I mean, old, way before he was famous, old. Drew Carey. Some of the best stuff I've ever seen in my life. That's all I gotta say.
Like his show.
No, before that. I mean, like 8 years before that. He was unbelievable. His show was good, don't get me wrong. Great. But yeah, the stuff he did when he was not even like fresh out of the military, he was fantastic. Here's what I'll say about this. And I can't watch The Price is Right anymore. It isn't him, it's me. Partially because I don't care about prices of stuff anymore. But
partially because you're becoming a grumpy old fart.
No, I was grumpy when I was six, so it doesn't matter. This is a really cool piece of hardware. I like the fact that they already have hardware spec'd and planned out kind of thing. Everything from the core brain of the system to the quote-unquote dock, to the Ethernet expansion, the relay expansion, the OLED expansion, the Arduino dock, servo dock. They have all this stuff. This isn't, nothing about this thing literally looks half baked, and that's what I'm like to see.
Yeah, no, it's refreshing to see so many considerations taken and to see it appear this mature, even though is the Kickstarter even ended?
No, there's 20 days left.
Yeah, see? Yeah, so it's one thing for a small company to go, hey, man, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? Oh, yeah, man, it'd be so awesome. Let's just throw it up on Kickstarter. And then we'll get the money in round one, and we'll, you know, release some, you know, beta kits. And then we'll be like, oh, if you want to get this thing into production with this stuff, we're going to have round two or whatever. But these guys seem to have their stuff together.
Well, I'll say they even have a nifty pirate-like map towards the bottom of their Kickstarter page, showing April 14th, Project Omega was initiated November 14th, May 2014 through November 2014, design, framework, software testing, December 2014 through March 2015, hardware testing, fine manufacture, finalized design. Now, Kickstarter, April 2015, sourcing parts, initial production, tooling and test. July 2015, tooling, tuning, production, QA. August 2015, packing, shipping, the Mega. October 2015, packing and shipping kits. So they literally have a roadmap already banged out. See, this is the kind of preparation I just don't see in virtually any Kickstarter project.
As long as they stay on schedule.
Well, no. I don't expect them to stay on schedule. It's really difficult. I expect them to be transparent about their schedule.
Yes, and communicate, especially to people who have, given you money to make this a reality. Communicate. Things happen. This stuff happens all the time to everybody everywhere. Yes, please let us know. But don't be that guy. Yeah. As Vince Stone would say, don't be that guy, Brad.
Exactly. We don't want
to brag. Don't be that guy. Don't be that guy to take our money and to string us along for 2 or 3 years to the point where we don't care what you release. We just want our money back. Don't be that guy.
Yeah. Definitely interesting stuff. We're really just going to have to be patient and wait and see what it unfolds. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because these are the kind of things that are gaining mental momentum is the only way I can put it. These are the kinds of things that as every month goes by and every year goes by, these kind of things are going to become more and more normal until quite literally they're not looked at as new and evolving technology. There's going to be technology that we just have to figure out how to use and how to utilize in a proper way kind of thing. And honestly, I look forward to that day.
Yeah, we're going to see. Yeah, because I mean, if you think of, the Raspberry Pi is not even, it's less than 4 years old. I think it's just over 3 years old.
I want to say three, but I don't, for some reason I want to say two, but that can't be right.
No, because it was OLF 2012 where Russ gave us those cases, or gave you the cases.
2012, February yeah. 29th. Good call.
Yep. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, less than 5 years, how many are on the market now? Over the next 3 years, I mean, you're going to see, it's fertile ground, man. That's all I got to say. You and I could go on about this forever, but you need to save it for that new show.
Gotcha.
And I will say that if Dora meets my salary demands, I may have a guest spot on that show from time to time.
I'm trying.
I know. Well, I'm colorblind, so it doesn't matter what kind of M&Ms you give me.
Well, you know.
Spoiler alert.
If more people go to podnuts.com/eBay, they can make this happen.
You could make it happen. If you're going to go on eBay and buy some stuff, use podnuts.com/eBay. Any purchase that you make on eBay, we get a little kickback from it. And that goes to fund future content, stuff for giveaways. Speaking of giveaways, congratulations to Chris Harbottle for winning that Ubuntu phone. We have yet to hear from him. I hope he...
Still been shifted to him.
Yeah, I did too.
No, that's the other phone. You're right. Okay, yeah, you shipped that one. I didn't ship the other one I was supposed to ship out.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry. Take it easy. So, I'm on your side.
For people being on the ball, Cody won door zero. Got it.
Oh, I never claimed I was on the ball.
Folks, this is me talking to you directly. Do you see what I have to deal with week in and week out?
Hey, that's why you get paid the big bucks. Get over it.
That is. I just got to review that direct deposit and just think, okay, why I do it.
Actually, I prefer you don't review it. Let's just roll with it.
Okay.
I don't want you to get overstressed, Cody.
I just see the statements come in and I go, well, at least I'm secure.
Very.
Okay.
Especially if you don't look.
So we've spoken today about you being a grumpy old curmudgeon of an old man person, and quite frankly, yeah, I think that over and you know what, here, I'm not going to blame you. I'm going to say it's stress in your life. That's maybe leading you to just becoming, the muscles in your neck are just getting a little bit tighter, and this is happening, and you need a release, and that release is coming next weekend, April 25th and 26th, Bellingham, Washington, Linux Fest Northwest. We're going to be there.
Yeah.
We've lost a couple potential combatants along the way.
I know, man. It hurt, brother.
It does.
I don't want to know. I don't want to say their names in public. I don't want to catch them any grief from anybody else.
All I'm saying is,
I know. I honestly,
I love them both dearly like brothers. Yeah. Now they can't make it. And it's sad, but we're going to move on. We're going to go on without them as they would want us to.
No. Yeah. We're not going to
No man left behind, them. Not in Linux, not in the open source world. If we have to leave them behind, you're being left behind. We got to move forward.
No. This is not a zombie movie. They didn't fall down and we're not leaving them behind. We're not leaving them behind. We're going on for them.
Yes. There's there you a difference. Go. Yeah, yes. However you need to spin it to not sound like you're abandoning somebody.
Exactly.
I'm all for it. Yeah. But man, I'm excited. We're literally hold on. We're in 9 days, yep. Martin and I are gonna pick you up from the airport. Nine days. Less than double digits. We're in single digit days now.
I know, now I'm getting a little happy there.
Oh man. I got 3 work days left and I'm on vacation.
Sucker. See,
ugh. See, what's nice about this is that I'm going to go on vacation, and at the end of it, the crescendo for this, that's not the right term.
The climax?
There you go. Yeah. normally, my vacations go like this. I'm excited for them to get here, and then about halfway through, I dread every single day toward the end, but that's not happening this time. I'm going to enjoy it up until the midway through, and then it's just going to continue to get better.
I know, and I'm just going to say this, okay? Mr. Owens tried to ask me today if I was comfortable with my sexuality. I'm just going to put it like this. I got no problem hugging Cody and Martin when I see them.
Because we're bro dudes.
And I don't care.
We're bro fellas.
And I don't care if you think it's too long. Martin, I kind of do, because he could crush me like a pimple. But
well, he's a 9 foot tall, lumberjack beast person.
I know, but a guy, you got to remind me, don't hit his toe. Whatever I do, do not hit his toe. Because if I am the guy that steps on his toe that weekend, I am going to be scorned. And I am going to be, oh man, I'm going to be such a bad guy. So I don't want to be that bad guy.
You're not going to have any, he's listening to this live. Yeah, he'll appreciate this. I don't want to say it because I'll jinx it. I had something else to say, but I'm not going to.
Don't.
I'm not.
Don't.
Yes, Martin, wear steel-toed shoes. Wear something. Don't, for God's sake, don't wear sandals.
Oh.
It's Washington. Your feet are going to get wet. You're going to get pneumonia.
Socks and sandals?
No. It's socks and sandals. The only time it's appropriate to wear socks and sandals is in a sandstorm. Period.
I don't know. I don't think there ever is, but,
No, dude. Those sandals rip up your toe knuckles?
You wear shoes.
I don't think so.
Jeez.
What if you... Well, no. I'm talking like last resort. You don't have shoes. You have a pair of socks and sandals. You're not going to wear them independently. You're just like, look, fellas, we're going to work together. You put them both on. This is going to get us to the plane. And then you get to the runway, and then it's already ravaged by the apes.
Right.
Okay. So.
Yeah.
Linux Fest Northwest. Man, I'm excited. Got that great lineup of talks. Let's see. Who can we say who is going to be with us in our excursion?
We can, but as we've learned, there is no guarantee.
That's true. Yeah, maybe we'll just leave it for fate.
Well, I mean, guys like Knucklehead Tech, I think it's going to take something severe for him not to show up.
Right.
Guys like you, guys like me, guys like Martin, it's going to take something monumental for us not to show up.
Yep.
I will say, I believe with absolute certainty, Steve Sears is going to be there Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck seems pretty determined on coming out, which I will say this is the first time I'll be able to meet Chuck. So that's awesome.
Chuck will be there. Chuck's great. You'll love Chuck.
Martin's son.
Yeah. Yep. Lunchbox. Yep. David Whitman. Is it Whitman or Witham?
Dude, you're asking me how to pronounce something. You're really reaching there, bro.
I'm gonna look it up. You keep talking. Who else is gonna be there?
John Hickey, I believe is his name. He actually sounded like he lived physically close to there. I know there's at least a couple more. My name recalling is not very good right now. But I guarantee you there's going to be at least 4 or 5 more people. We didn't even know we're going to show up or going to be there. So it should be good times, had by all kind of thing. We are going to have some content. I encourage you guys, go to twitter.com/podnuts if you want the stuff as it happens kind of thing. When we release pictures, it will be from there. When we release any kind of live streaming audio, it will be there. And whenever we release any content on this RSS feed for this show, it will also be there. I stalled as long as I could, Cody.
No, no, you're fine. You're fine. You're fine. Oh, yeah, David. It is David Whitman. I was right. Okay. David Whitman.
Good man. Good man.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Who is going to potentially interview us? Which will be interesting. I've only had that happen a couple times, and it was
in your pocket.
Huh?
You have a mouse in your pocket?
I always forget this dumb joke. What do you mean, Grandpa?
I'm just wondering if you have a mouse in your pocket.
Oh yeah, no, you know you're gonna, dude. Whatever, it's gonna happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna happen. You can be bashful all you want. Everybody knows you're just a curmudgeon.
Huh?
He's actually Door's bringing a small patch of grass. And in one of those little, travel pots, just so he can yell for people to stay off his lawn.
Oh, I didn't realize. In this tool I'm using, I can actually see the quote-unquote chat. Matthew Williams has been here for a long time. Mike Tehan has been here for a long time. That's also very good. And this is the real kicker to me. Klaatu von Schlacker has been here.
Has been where?
In the chat. In the quote-unquote chat. The live YouTube chat. Comments.
I don't even see it.
Nobody does. It's YouTube. He's there. And yes, Matthew, you're not going to be there. I wish you were. You said you were going to be involved with some technical talk track for some non-Linux conference. Do me a favor, shoot me that info so I can make sure I mention that before that conference happens. He's looking forward to ways to try to reignite. Oh man, I hate using that word now. Reignite ILF. Indiana Linux Fest. So I definitely wish him luck with that. And I ain't gonna lie, Klaatu, you listening to this, you tell me this right now. If there's a Linux conference out there in New Zealand that you're going to, you need to tell me about it. Because if there's any way I can make it, I don't care if it's a 20-hour flight. I'll make that flight.
Yes.
For Klaatu. Not for a New Zealand Linux conference. I don't care about that. I'll go there for like Klaatu.
I rubbed elbows with him. I didn't get to talk to him at that year in NELF. I don't know. I think it was just, I don't know what it was. Anyway, I didn't talk to him. I should have, damn it. And then he moved out of the country.
Well, maybe it's because he knew you were coming. I'm just saying.
Maybe I am an imposing figure, as people have said. Yeah, man. Good stuff. But yeah, Linux Fest Northwest. If you guys have the ability to make it up to Washington, Bellingham area, if you want to see Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Super Coop, a.k.a. the Ice Machine, take the Tap Trail Challenge. Bring your recording devices because it's happening.
Yeah.
It's going to be good
times. And I'll say, if you can't make it, don't fret. If you're in Florida, you have Tampa Podfest.
Podfest, yep.
Tampa Podfest. If you're anywhere around Detroit, which if you are, first off, don't go out at night. But if you do, PenguinCon is close. If you're anywhere by Kansas City, Kansas, there's Kansas City Linux Fest. You can go there and shake hands with 5150. And then let me tell you something. There's a few people in this life I'd like to hang out with for a night. One of them is 5150. So,
oh, totally.
If you're in the Kansas City area, I'm telling you right now, go there, document the experience, put it out there for other people to know what they missed out on, because that sounds like a very cool conference.
And I have to give you a correction there. First of all, if you live in Detroit, you can walk at night now.
Yeah, right.
But they have RoboCop there.
Not enough. They would need like 2,000 RoboCops.
Well, no, they got RoboCop, and then on every other corner, they have one of the Ed 209s, walking around.
Not enough.
Well, it's you say it's not enough. I say it's not enough to revive the auto industry, but it is enough to keep Detroit safe.
Man, let me tell you something. Detroit, anything like Baltimore, and I know it is, it ain't enough.
Okay.
I've lived here my whole life. I won't go into Baltimore at night unless, literally, I got my dad with me who is legally capable of carrying his firearm around.
I've seen The Wire. I know what's happening over there.
Bad thing is, it's a lot worse than The Wire.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, much like Breaking Bad is like a tame documentary to how the meth trade actually is.
That's a comedy.
Oh, whatever. That's a gripping drama. But yeah, you live out here for a while, you think, oh, someone got their head crushed by an ATM. Yeah, okay. Tuesday.
I love Martin Bando commented like 2 minutes ago, what? There's a YouTube chat? Sorry, Martin. I seriously didn't know myself till I scrolled down in this YouTube live events window.
Oh, man. We could do like post-show Q&A in there, right?
No, you can do live Q&A in here.
Oh, what? Oh, dude, that's awesome. We need to do that. If you want to have us do live Q&A sessions, like 48 hours in a row, I don't know, for an hour here or there. I don't know. Send an email to podcast@linuxforrestofus.com. That's something we could explore. That'd be fun.
Well, no, I'll say, I would agree with Martin right here. Martin, don't worry, Martin. We will agree on one channel of chat, and that's it. Just one channel. To have more than one channel is really painful for everyone involved, especially you. So don't feel like you got to be in both places.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
I just happened to see this one place. That's all.
Huh. Interesting. So, Door, where can we find you online?
The easiest place is mail@podnuts.com or podnuts.com and just go click contact. If you want to put up with my ramblings and random pictures of my son who can't smile because he's my son, go to Google Plus and just search all one word, door-to-door geek, DORTODORGEEK. You know, and Twitter, I at least try to look at stuff, but it's really difficult.
Yes. And if you'd like to get a hold of me, please send me an email to cody@podnuts.com. You can hit me up on Google Plus. It's just plus Cody Cooper. And let's see. Oh, yeah. Follow me on Twitter at Cody Cooper. Very, very simple there. And yeah, if you're going to be, okay, please reach out and let us know if you're going to Linux Fest Northwest. Because as cool as it would be to just meet some of you guys there, if we can coordinate somehow beforehand, we have some special fun stuff planned. And the earlier we can let you know about that while we're out there, the better. So yeah, let us know. And yeah, I think you'll be plenty surprised and happy with what's going to be going on.
Yeah, and I'm just going to throw this out there real quick. I just put this link up a couple days ago. On podnuts.com, the main site, there's going to be a link there for a while. It's to www.gr33nink.com. Okay. Podnuts, as a community, has been very deficient in graphic artist connections. Okay. If you need any kind of graphical needs, web design, digital print, or physical print needs, I encourage you to go check that link out. Not only because the guy, at least from what I can tell, does really good work, number one. Number two, he's a guy who supports Podnuts by coming on shows. I would like to, as a community, support him back. So if you do have graphic needs, just like I ask people to give Think Penguin a shot on their computer stuff, give this guy a shot if you need graphic stuff done.
Very good. Yeah, definitely keep supporting him. All right, cool. So, as always, please check out our good friend Jonathan Nato over at the Accessible Computing Foundation. That is the ACF.TK, a fantastic organization going forward into the future to help people with the disabilities get the technology that they need and that they can actually interface with in their daily lives. You can become a regular contributor to the ACF for as little as $2 a month. And I got to tell you, I have been a contributor for almost 3 years now. Whenever I see that little PayPal notification come through letting me know I kicked them some shekels, makes my heart a little bit warmer that day. Knowing also that the guy who's heading it up is someone that I trust and who is using those funds for a very, very noble purpose. If you want to see some of the software and items that they are putting into effect for that community, you can also download Sonar, which is the custom Linux distribution specifically geared toward accessibility based on Manjaro Linux. And you can get that for absolutely free at sonargnulinux.com. So check it out. All right. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. Please hit us up if you're going to be going to Linux Fest Northwest. We really, really do want to hear from every single one of you. And please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.